to the Deco Retro program here on Planet FM. We will bring you interesting interviews, updates of future deco, modern, retro, and other related events. Also the stories that celebrate New Zealand's history and its people, as well as book reviews and other snippets capturing the glamour and fascination of a bygone era. Deco Retro, Deco Retro.
Good afternoon, listeners. This is Nancy on the Deco Retro program. Today we have in the studio Rob Elliott. He was educated at Mount Albert Grammar School. He has a diploma in business management. He's a graduate of the School of Business, Stanford University. He's a fellow of the New Zealand Institute of Management. And he's a former chair of the New Zealand Society of Authors, Auckland, which has 600 members. He is also the author of 8 books. Rob's business career started as a management trainee in the automobile assembly and marketing at Volkswagen in Wolfsburg, Germany. He became general manager of VW Motors Limited and later a director and CEO of the parent company Motor Holdings Limited from 1973 to 1985. In 1972, during his first visit to Japan, the company won the New Zealand Honda franchise for motorcycles. 100,000 motorcycles were sold in the following 10 years. When Motor Holdings was taken over, he moved to the Cable Price Corporation, where he was the manager of the automobile division with responsibility for Toyota and Mercedes-Benz, and later the takeover of the Kid Garrett Group. In 1993, he was invited by his friends at Honda Japan to become a director of Honda New Zealand Limited, responsible for sales and marketing, a position he held until his retirement in 2001. His business career made him a world traveller, including over 100 visits to Japan. His latest book, Murder Comes to U3A, is set in an English village. A serial killer is on the loose and amphetamines are involved. He set the book overseas so that the characters would not be identified as coming from his local U3A in Meadowbank, Auckland. In 1976, he married Riko Hayakawa, the daughter of the famous Japanese actor Sisu Hayakawa, who appeared in over 90 films, including The Bridge on the River Kwai, where he took the role of the hated Colonel Saito. Riko followed her career in the arts here in New Zealand as a successful artist and printmaker. She was diagnosed with leukemia and passed away some years ago. His book, Don't Come Back, is a record both of Riko's early life in Japan and their nearly 30 years together here in Auckland. Since retirement, Rob has also been involved in voluntary community service. Good afternoon, Rob. It's lovely to have you in the studio today.
Thank you, Nancy. Nice to be here.
Now, you are the author of 8 books. What are they called, and goodness, when did you ever manage to write them, because you've had such a busy career?
Well, Nancy, I'd always been interested in writing, but I hadn't had the opportunity to sit down and write anything of any great consequence until I retired. And my late wife had been keeping diaries over the years about her life. Mm-hmm. And when she was diagnosed with leukemia, her artist friends it began to insist that she should write a book about her experiences of a Japanese woman leaves Japan,
yes,
comes to New Zealand, meets a Kiwi boy, etc. Mm. And so when she passed away, I took the diaries and started to cobble together a book. And to help out, I went to a seminar at Auckland University. And that was being run by Professor Kath Dunsford. I showed Kath my manuscript. And she said, well, it's a nice story, but it's only half the story about Reiko. What about you? Mm. You better write a story about yourself. So I wrote the second half.
Right.
And
so this was all when you retired.
And it was
Reiko still alive?
No, she had passed away.
Okay.
She had passed away.
Mm.
And so I sat down and wrote the book.
Right.
And I was pleased that I had got it on record, but of course I then began to feel that I could write. And
yes.
So I didn't want to stop, and I
kept on writing. Good on you.
And in a way I fell back on my international experience in the motor industry, and I'd seen so many funny things happen. And
yes, I'm sure, in those years. That was the 1960s, 70s, wasn't it?
Right through up until the 80s, I suppose. And so I wrote Have I Got a Deal for You? Comic Tales from the Motor Industry. And I wrote it...
Sounds typical, doesn't it?
Yes. I wrote it and really related the humorous side of all the things that I've seen with the customers and the salesmen and the receptionists and the engineers. And
yeah, well, they've had some doubtful salesmen, haven't they? I know when I've gone to buy, well, I usually buy a second-hand car, so I'll look at them and then go, I don't know about you, but then you've got some good ones as well. So.
Oh, yes, you run the whole gamut. One of the best salesmen that I ever employed had actually been a vacuum cleaner salesman, and he thought it was much easier selling cars than it was selling vacuum cleaners.
I'm sure. More in demand anyway than vacuum cleaners, cars, aren't they?
Yes.
Now, you had approximately 100 visits to Japan. And so when did you meet Reiko there? Sort of at the start or the end of your 100 visits there?
No, fortunately right at the beginning.
Oh, lovely.
The company had changed direction. It hasn't had much press over the years, but Volkswagen very nearly collapsed in 1971.
The Beetle
sales were being overtaken by the new Japanese cars.
Right.
And
I love the Beetle, though.
Yes, the Beetle.
I loved it, yes.
Well, there were 60 million of them made, I think was the number.
Mm.
So we decided to switch the business from Germany to Japan.
Right.
And I went to Japan with the then chairman. And in 1972, and we started negotiating with various Japanese companies. First one we negotiated with was Mazda in Hiroshima.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to Hiroshima. That was my first stop in Japan, was the Hiroshima, which is well in the south.
Right.
And so I was introduced to Japanese culture there. I stayed in the Mazda guest house, which is on Lake Miyajima. That's the one which is
lovely.
Famous for having the big red Torii gate. It often used to be on old Pan Am calendars. You'd see this lake with a big red Torii gate, and that was
fantastic.
What I saw looking across from the Mazda guest house.
Wow.
And so we negotiated there the original joint venture with Mazda Motors, and we formed Mazda Motors of New Zealand, and my company began to assemble Mazdas.
Right.
And from that trip, we went back to Tokyo, which was the first time. I'm getting around to how I met Reiko.
Yes, of course.
The story's coming.
Well, how exactly did you meet her?
Well,
did you meet her on the street?
We'd been put into the trading company, Sumitomo Shoji, had put us into the Flash Hotel, the Palace Hotel, which is opposite the Imperial Palace in Tokyo.
So they really look after you when you go there years?
Well, they wanted to start an assembly plant, and we had the import license.
Okay.
So we were needed.
Yeah.
So the chairman said to me at dinner that night, what kind of a room have you got? I've got a suite. And I said, I've got a telephone booth. He said, well, that's no good. We better change hotels. And I'd been reading the Playboy magazine of the month, which had an article on Tokyo.
Right.
And in it, it had described this wonderful new hotel in West Tokyo called Shinjuku, the new Hotel Intercontinental. So he said, let's go to the new hotel, sounds like us.
So off, that's where you met Reiko. What was she doing there?
She was the chief entertainer for the Hotel Intercontinental.
Okay, she sang?
She sang in French.
Yep.
Piaf style.
In French?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
La Vie en Rose and all of those Piaf songs.
How did she know French? Was that in her education in Japan?
Yes. She had a degree in fine arts and languages.
Mm-hmm.
And she spoke obviously perfect English.
Right.
Pretty good French and some Russian.
So she was a pretty well-educated young woman.
She was well-educated. She'd come from an international family with her father being travelling internationally as well. So I met her there, and one thing led to another. Lightning struck.
Yes.
And
I was like, this is it. This is the one.
Well, we were both married at the time.
Yes. And, so it was quite a scandal, I imagine.
It was a wonderful scandal.
Yes.
The highlight of the whole thing was a couple of years later, after the divorces had gone through, Susan Maxwell, the social reporter for the New Zealand Herald, interviewed Reiko at our house in Half Moon Bay.
Yes.
And Reiko rang me and said, oh, I've just had an interview with a newspaper reporter. It'll probably be in the paper. Well, 2 days later, when I walked into my office, the whole of the staff were sort of laughing at me, looking at me and glancing around. And my secretary said, have you seen this morning's Herald? And I said, no. She said, there's a full page about you.
Yes.
A full page in the New Zealand Herald about my divorce, how I met Reiko, etc.
Oh, dear.
So that... The secret was out.
Fair enough. Now, Reiko came to New Zealand and she had two sons.
Yes.
They came and lived with you too.
Yes.
How did the boys get on at school? You know, in those days there wouldn't have been many Japanese children at school
there were none.
Oh, no, they were a bit of a rarity
They were a rarity.
Were they treated well by the other children?
They were a novelty, of course. Japanese boys at Ōraki Primary.
Yes.
You can imagine. And we had children from the railway houses down in Napipi Road also went to Ōraki Primary.
Yeah.
And Reiko, in a Japanese tradition, started putting on afternoon tea for the class.
Oh, right.
So the boys invite friends. Oh, yeah. Yes.
So they all turned up for that, I can imagine.
One day 20 turned up.
She would be very popular.
And they taught them a lot of obscenities for the first for the first bits of vocabulary.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And then they had the inventions like rice to see you.
Oh.
And for example, there's a nip in the air.
Oh dear.
And so we grew up with all of those. All of those.
But on the whole, they were pretty happy and accepted.
They
became a couple of little Kiwis, I imagine, in the end.
They certainly did. Yes.
Yeah. And what about Reiko, how did she fit into society here? Because she'd be a bit of a rarity.
Yes, she was, but with her interest in art, she joined an art group with Terry Stringer and Rodney Fumston, Auckland artists.
Right.
And they mentored her very well and in particular encouraged her with her skills to become a printer. And so she developed that art. We bought a printing press so she could do her own prints in the house, which she did very successfully, limited editions.
So they have to draw first, and then they make plates or something.
Oh yes, she made.
I'm not too sure how it works.
No, she made all of her own plates, etched her own plates.
Out of what?
Out of aluminium plates, etching them with acid and particular ways of having lost wax method. Very complicated.
Yes,
and
I'll say.
So she did a lot of work there. And that was one of the tragedies was and led on to the breakdown of her immune system. She was using, for cleaning up the plates, she was using a lot of turpentine.
Yes.
And I would go home after work and there'd be the strong aroma of turps in the studio. And I got a book from the United States called Artist Beware.
Yes.
And it listed all of the things that artists should beware of, like lead pencils and oils and terps and evaporative things.
I think that's probably why a lot of people don't paint in oils so much now, do they? They've taken on the acrylics or they've gone back to watercolour. Yes.
That's right. Mm. And I think that, that led to the breakdown of her immune system.
Oh.
And
you think the terps and
yes, because terps apparently gets absorbed into the system.
Oh dear.
And it sits there near the vertebrae.
Oh.
And so
it's as bad as lead, I suppose, isn't it?
Yes. Lead as well. Mm. And she developed atopic eczema.
Oh,
and
that's
then
right.
One thing
yes.
led to another over the years with the deterioration of her health. Yes.
Oh dear!
But no, she got into the art scene and
yes.
Was very very popular.
Mm.
And
well, she'd be quite different on that scene.
Oh,
she was. Yes,
and she went out of her way to be very hospitable.
Yes.
With the art group and those.
She seemed to be that
people.
Type of person.
Yes, she was.
And did she use a lot of like Japanese type? Art and her, or did she?
She did a variety. The art,
Japanese art is quite different, isn't it? I love it. I think it's gorgeous.
Yes. Mm. The art group would employ models from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
So she did quite a few pieces of still life and life drawing of models.
Yes.
And then she started to do limited editions. One was, for example, images from Japanese children's kites.
Oh, and she did one because they're quite beautiful, aren't they?
Yes. She did one called the Kite Series.
Oh,
and she did one of no masks from the Japanese theatre.
Oh, because those masks are something else, aren't they?
Series of no masks.
Mm-hmm.
And then in 1999, she was commissioned by a company that had the TV rights for the Millennium filming of the first sunrise.
Oh, of course, I remember that.
Yes.
In Gisborne.
Yeah, that was it. Actually, it was at Pitt Island.
Oh, was it? Okay.
East of the Chathams.
Okay,
and
right.
She did a series... she designed a print for that, and they'd also used it on a T-shirt, for example.
Oh, wow.
And it was called the Y2K series because,
yes.
of course, Y2K was expected to break down all of the computer programs in the world.
That's right. I remember all that. It was quite a worry, and then sort of woke up. And
it didn't happen.
The next day and nothing had happened. The TV was still going and your computer was still going. Yes, it was weird, that, wasn't it?
That's right.
Yeah, so it was so sad that you think that the terps, you know, contributed to her leukemia.
Yeah,
and there are apparently two types of leukemia, and she had the most invasive one, didn't she? And it was hopeless, sort of.
Yes, this chronic leukemia for which there's a drug available now, which is very, very successful.
Yes, but mainly with children too. I mean, so children seem to get it and then they cure it, which is wonderful.
That's right. But she had AML, which is acute myeloid leukemia, and there's still no drug cure for that. The only cure really is a bone marrow transplant.
Oh, my gosh, that sounds complicated.
Yes, it's very complicated. And that's, of course, Jose Carreras had always been...
of course, he had cancer. I remember that.
Yes. Mm. She was a fan of his, and then... when he came to New Zealand in the 80s, we went to see him at Western Springs, I think it was.
Yes.
And then when he sang with Placido Domingo, and they had the trio. We went to the Melbourne Cricket Ground. They had a big concert in Melbourne.
Okay. Yes.
We went to that, and then at that time, Reiko had. Been diagnosed, and because she knew he had survived, he was a survivor through a bone marrow transplant.
Yeah,
and he wrote a book called Singing from the Soul.
Okay,
and we got hold of that book, and it explained all about bone marrow transplant and how he had survived. And he was a supporter of the Auckland Leukemia Foundation. And, of course, he's got the Carreras Foundation for Leukemia in Barcelona.
Oh, okay. His survival has been quite...
Remarkable,
hasn't it? I remember reading that he had it, and I thought, oh, how terrible, because out of the three tenors, I always liked him the best.
Careers,
I thought he was fabulous.
So a year before she passed away, I had organised to go to take her to Barcelona to one of Carreras's concerts.
Yep.
And she deteriorated rather rapidly, and we weren't able to make the trip.
Oh.
So I wrote to a friend of mine who was a director of Honda in Spain, and got him to write or go and see Carreras in Barcelona and see if he could get a letter written.
Okay.
So it ended up he did.
Right.
Carreras wrote to Reiko, said how sorry he was that she wasn't able to come, wished her all the best and to carry on the fight with leukemia. It was a wonderful letter, which I've had framed.
That was lovely.
Yes.
Yes, but in the end it was hopeless and she passed away.
Yes.
So very sad tale.
Yes, it was.
Now, we might just move on to your book, which was the first book I sort of noticed, which is Murder Comes to U3A.
Yes.
Now, that sounds very interesting. Well, I've read it anyway.
Right, thank you.
And it's great. And just the twists and whatnot, it's sort of like an Agatha Christie type of thing. I'm just wondering how you got all the sort of story. I mean, did you base it on any of the U3A people and not tell them anything about it?
maybe I'd never admit to it, but
yes.
That was the reason that I cited it north of London. But I'd been gossiping, I suppose, with the family about various members of U3A, and of course in Medibank we have 300 members.
Yeah, and there's all sorts of people belong to U3A.
That's right. And my daughter-in-law said, well, look, you're grizzling so much, why don't you write a book about it? And so that gave me the spark to write. And at the same time, I was doing a bit of research on methamphetamine and pee, whichever name you like to...
It's rife in New Zealand, isn't it? It's horrific.
That's right. So that's why I wove the story of the dealer into the book, because it's all around us, and it could be it could be anybody.
You don't sort of think of U3A and methamphetamine, but who knows?
And I was fascinated by it because it had been discovered. It was synthesized by a Japanese scientist in the 1900s, and then it was picked up by a German company, the Temler Company, in 1938, and they began to market it as a sort of byproduct of benzedrine. But they refined it even more, and to launch it, they launched it in Berlin by sending out a sample to, I think, 600 doctors in Berlin.
Right.
Of three milligram doses.
Yes.
And within 6 months, they had half the doctors in Berlin hooked.
Oh.
Because what people don't understand about meth is that you can't sample it. If you take
If
you take it once, you're hooked.
Yes.
Only takes once. To get you hooked.
Oh,
so
horrific, isn't it?
Temler then decided to market it, and they marketed it in a little aluminium tube about 6 inches or 8 or 10 centimetres long, like you used to be able to buy glucose tablets, and they sold it under the name Pervitin. And it was a very attractive little tube with yellow writing with Pervitin on it.
Gosh, and that's horrific. Yeah. They're allowed to do that?
Oh, well, in 1939, the Nazis discovered it.
Yes.
And history shows that this myth that the tank drivers driving tanks into France without sleeping for 4 days, they didn't sleep for 4 days. They were all they were all on Pervitin.
My gosh.
And it got to the stage where young German soldiers were writing home to mum, because you could buy it over the counter, saying, mum, I'm out of Pervitin. Could you please buy some and send some to me at the front?
Gosh, that's quite evil, that whole thing, isn't it?
Well,
so how... They must have been found out and sort of stopped by...
No, they weren't. I mean, they used it right through the war. The Germans in 1940 ordered 35 million doses from Temla. And they took all the stock away from the doctors and chemists and gave it to the soldiers.
Good grief.
So these horrific acts of murder and sabotage by the SS, as far as I can read...
Probably committed under...
They're all on amphetamines.
Because, you read some of those things and you think, oh, God, how could mankind come down to doing things like that? But probably Hitler was on it himself.
Yeah, and of course...
evil.
The Americans had decided not to use it. They used a much milder form of Benzedrine to keep their pilots awake.
Right.
So completely different effect.
But they didn't get so hooked, did they?
No. But the Japanese used it for the kamikaze pilots. When you see the newsreels of the Japanese kamikaze pilots being given a little cup of sake, they've been given an amphetamine to take with the sake so that it could drive their aircraft into an aircraft carrier. So anyway, that's
how interesting, but that's quite horrific, really, isn't it?
And now, of course, we've got it overtaking the whole north of Auckland, apparently is awash with amphetamines.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And, anyway, that was how I injected it into my story, because how evil it is.
It's totally evil. Well, look, Rob, unfortunately, we've come to the end of our time, and thank you very much. It's been a really interesting interview. Now, I know there's a piece of music that you would like to play.
First of all, Nancy, thank you for having me on.
Oh, it's been wonderful.
I've thoroughly enjoyed being here.
Talk for another half an hour, I'm sure.
Because Reiko was a great fan of Careerus, I've chosen one of the ones that he sings. It's a piece from Mozart's Clarinet Concerto. It's the Adagio. And it's one of the favourites for her, and I say for me. It's called "Love Is My Melody."
If you enjoyed our program today, listen every second Wednesday of the month at 2:10 p.m. or download us anytime online at planetaudio.org.nz/DecoRetro. And we would like to thank our sponsors, Club Moderne, Art Deco Society Auckland, we will keep you informed of all future exciting and glamorous events to be held by Club Modern. For more information, email judith.moore650@gmail.com. That's judith.moore650@gmail.com. Bye for now.